Hello, mental health champs, and a warm welcome to yet another episode on the show. If you're listening to the sound of my voice for the first time, well, my name is Irike Tomafivo, and I am your host. And this is the Mental Health Podcast. The Mental Health Podcast was created out of the depths of my heart to show up, speak up, and be boldly honest about my beliefs in magic, and also to create even more awareness on mental health and mental health challenges. And any episode reach your heart or leave a spark within, leave a review and share with your friends so the podcast can reach more people and create even more heartfelt sparks. And I believe in synchronicity and not coincidence. So if you find yourself listening to any of this episode, maybe there's a jewel for in here especially. And maybe heartbeat by heartbeat, we'll all be able to make the world a more loving and kinder place where human emotions are prioritized even more. So sit back as we dive into today's episode. On our last podcast episode, I shared my insights on self-awareness and self-validation. And to my greatest joy, a lot of persons actually found the episode really relatable. And it was really so beautiful to see that people are now becoming more, or people are getting really intentional of becoming more self-aware and learning how to validate their feelings, their emotions, and also their experiences. And if you've not listened to that episode, you have all the time to do so. Just click, scroll down to whatever listening platform you're listening to via and listen to it, because a lot of things were said, and it's going to help you moving forward and also help you on your journey to self-discovery and self-development. So on today's episode promises to be an incredible one, because I have amazing people on our platform today to share with us on an important topic. Are you as excited as I am to sit back as I introduce the topic and also introduce our amazing guest? Let's take a deep breath together as we dive into that. This week was set aside to, create an awareness on body image positivity and eating disorder. So we thought of actually creating an episode to a podcast episode where people can actually be more enlightened on this topic, this important and sensitive aspect of mental health. And we have amazing people on our guests. Thank you so much, everyone, for, creating our time to be part of something really empowering and something really impactful. This podcast is proudly sponsored by the Nigerian Medical Students Association on Mental Health Advocacy. So could you give us a brief introduction, your name and what you do?
Hi, everyone. Hi, Faber. It is an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me. So I am a clinical psychologist as well as a social worker. I have been in the field for 13 years. I graduated from the University of Kutztown in Pennsylvania, the United States, and then I went ahead and pursued my master's degree at the University of the West Indies in the Caribbean. My background is quite extensive. For the past 13 years, I have primarily been working in the judiciary system, so family court to be specific. My role primarily included therapy, individual counseling, family counseling, domestic abuse. I also work with what they would refer to as beyond control children. We now refer to them as children in need of supervision. So any type of mental disorder, whether that range from depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, you have it. As of right now, I'm presently taking on a role where I will be working with prisoners transitioning from the prison system back into the real world. So that transitional period between both spaces, what they would refer to as a halfway house, or what we call a recovery residence, that's primarily the population that I'm working with as of right now. So again, thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Hello everyone, and a good day to you all. My name is Uchimu Zuchiku Michael. I'm a medical doctor, a model and catwalk coach, and you know, once in a while, I'm a music personnel. I don't even know what that means. But yeah, it's so good to be here. I'm really excited to be here.
Hi everyone, my name is Chananaya. I'm a mental health awareness advocate and a human resource consultant. I'm super excited to be here. I can't wait to get into this topic.
Thank you so much, Ms. Keeney. I mean, a whole 13 years of experience, that's quite much. And I'm really sure my audience, my listeners, yes, excited as I am to, you know, get right into the conversation. Thank you so much, Mr. Michael, for creating time. Thank you, Naya. Thank you, everyone, for, you know, being part of something really empowering. So let's get right into the conversation. So on today's episode, I mean, we are creating an awareness for body image positivity and eating disorder. And Ms. Keeney, I mean, my listeners, my audience, even I myself, to an extent, we have little knowledge on this aspect, the sensitive aspect of mental health. So could you, like, you know, share with us what it means to have an eating disorder and the different types?
Being completely clueless about eating disorders may not necessarily be a negative thing. It might mean that it's not an affliction, so you're not aware of certain things. However, if it is an issue and it is a presenting problem and you're not mindful of it, therein the problem lies, right? So predominantly, there are three types of eating disorders: the very popular anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and binge eating. And these disorders could include restrictive eating, it could include irregular eating patterns, as well as compulsive eating.
Wow, thank you so much. I think I just heard about binge eating for the first time. I mean, we all learn every day. That's one of the beautiful aspects of advocating for mental health. So we would also like to know, I mean, what are some common causes of these eating disorders you just mentioned?
So some common factors, or in psychology, as we like to refer to as risk factors. Primarily when it comes to eating disorders would be, let's start off with social media, because it's very obvious, right? We're in 2023, and the pressure and the influence and the unrealistic ideations that come with the body image and what is expected is number one. That's why I would want to go ahead and start there. Psychologically, some of the common factors would also be depression, anxiety. So this is what we call comorbid diseases. So these are mental illnesses that you tend to see occur with one another. So when you have a client before you, or you have a patient before you, and you see depression and you see anxiety, you then do certain assessments to determine if an eating disorder may or does exist. And typically, you tend to see they go hand in hand. Low self-esteem and low confidence, so questioning your value, questioning your feelings of worth, is also a potential risk factor for developing an eating disorder, as well as a history of trauma, abuse, neglect. We hear people say all the time, I was raised in a household where I didn't receive love, I didn't receive attention. So they tend to develop certain maladaptive behaviors that can now contribute to this eating disorder that tells them, I am not good enough. So that's your low self-esteem and your low self-confidence. Then we also have temperament. Some people are just hardwired differently. So you may be hardwired to think negatively, where someone might maybe hardwired to think more positive thoughts. So those are some of the main risk factors that you see in people with certain eating disorders. Also, things like OCD, so that's your obsessive compulsive disorder, perfectionist, again, it all boils down to your temperament. So those are certain traits that you essentially were born with, perhaps.
Thank you so much, Ms. Keeley, for your wonderful insights, as always. So over to you, Naya, because I would like to know, what are some common misconceptions people have about eating disorders and body image positivity? I mean, and how can we better educate ourselves on this important and sensitive topic?
I think a major misconception is that eating disorders go only one way. So there are a group of people that believe that eating disorders only entail overeating, and some believe that it only entails undereating. So there are different forms of eating disorders, whether it comes in bulimia or obsessively watching one's weight, counting calories, whatever the reason is, it all falls under eating disorders, and moderation is just the key. Do you understand? Not doing too much, not doing too little, it's just the key, and that's what's important. And I would say, what we can do as people, and whether people that suffer from eating disorders or people that suffer from eating disorders around us, is educating ourselves, literally in its name, go online, do research, have open conversations, yeah? That's with the people that you know are suffering with these disorders, and say, you know what, what are your triggers? What can I do to help? How do you cope with this? How, do you understand? Having those conversations, bringing it out, and educating yourself again, which is doing research, going online, literally Google online how to have a conversation with someone without, you know, sounding judgmental, without pushing off my, you know, prejudice or stereotype or whatnot on them. And there's content out there, loads of content that literally just teaches you how to go about these conversations and these relationships and navigate them and support friends going through this. So I think it's just about being intentional, about looking for that content and bettering yourself for yourself and for the people around you.
Over to you, Mr. Michael. I mean, what role do you believe social media play in perpetrating harmful body image ideas, and how we can use social media to promote body positivity and self-love instead?
Oh, thank you very much for this question. I like to think of social media as this very big weapon. It can either be used to further cause problems with body image issues or to fix it. Now, why is this? Because social media creates these beauty standards, and it helps us consciously or unconsciously to define what we consider as being good, as being desirable, as being nice. We look at what we see, and then we say, that's what I want, or that's what should be, that's what it should be like. Now, when the idea that is being pushed out is a certain kind of way, stereotypically a certain kind of way, people are stereotypically expected to look a certain kind of manner, we begin to see that this problem of body image is made worse, right? And I think one thing that social media can help to fix it is representation. Now, speaking as I'm a professional model, and I can say that the situation is actually slightly better, even though we have a long way to go, the situation is actually slightly better. Now we have more representation. We can see that we have more, you see different colors of skin, you see different body sizes, different body shapes, different stature being represented on social media. And then you begin to see that, okay, so even though I don't look this way, it doesn't mean that looking this way is wrong. And I think that that's the most important thing that social media can do for us, representation. Puts more of different kinds of people out there, so that if you don't relate to the skinny white girl, you can relate to the thick, dark-skinned lady. I think that this is of utmost importance, and it can go a long way in helping to fix this the problem of of body image. I also think that it's important that we also let people understand the adverse effects that eating disorder has on the body, especially long term. I think it's very important that we also let people understand that. And then people need to also get into that. We need to preach the gospel of being comfortable in your skin. The truth is that if 10 people all eat the same kind of food, all live under the same kind of conditions, all do the same exercises for 10 years, they're still not going to look the exact same way. So it's important that we understand that we have these idiosyncrasies and we have these individualities in our body system. Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Michael and Chinanaya, for your amazing and wonderful insights, as always. So, I mean, over to you, Ms. Keeney, the most a very important question. I mean, how can we recognize that somebody someone really close to us might be having an eating disorder? I mean, what signs and signals should we look out for?
Yes, Faber, this is a significant question that you're asking. When we talk about warning signs, or like you mentioned, signals, what are some of those signals that we as friends or relatives need to look out for that can now be an indicator that someone is struggling with an eating disorder? So for instance, weight change sounds obvious, but it's not always that obvious, because it can happen progressively and not necessarily immediately, right? So extreme weight change, extreme weight loss, extreme weight gain, changes in someone's eating patterns, or yourself. We're not here to self-diagnose, but we're here to be mindful, right? So am I seeing a change in my eating patterns? A change in exercise habits, a disruption in mood. So I'm noticing that my mood is dysregulated, as we like to put it in psychology. Is there preoccupation with my body image? Am I having obsessive thoughts and compulsions when it comes to how I look and how I appear on the outside? Am I restricting my diet, which would be the anorexia? Am I overindulging, which would be your binging? And then, of course, bulimia we have as well. Once we can be mindful and aware of what are those warning signs, then we can be able to tell ourselves that something is wrong and we need to seek treatment and we need to seek help.
Thank you so much for those signs. I mean, even personally for me, come to think of it, I mean, I actually don't pay attention to these little signals. I just like turn a blind eye. But now that you've emphasized on them, personally, on my own end, I'm going to be watchful for people who portray this signs. Thank you so much. So now, more importantly, I mean, someone with an eating disorder, how can they get help? Where can they get the help they actually need?
Absolutely right. If you don't know what you're looking out for, you can't throw a blind eye to it. So it's all about being able to bring awareness and being able to enhance your consciousness. And that's what we do in therapy. We say, right now, you are unaware. So how can we increase your awareness so that we are now more mindful? And you know that you're making poor choices, and you know that something has to change. In terms of receiving help, I suggest people go to their local health clinics, because most times people don't know where to go. Resources can be limited. So by going to your local health clinic, you can now be channeled into the right resources, the right recommendations. And we have something that we call a triage. So is this person mild, moderate, or severe? Do they need attention immediately? Is this urgent and they can't be turned away? Is this person high risk? Are they now suicidal along with this eating disorder, the depression, the clinical depression, the anxiety? Or is it that they're more mild in terms of their diagnosis and they require outpatient treatment? So by heading to your local clinic, you can now be directed in the proper direction, proper area. So that might mean seeing a clinical psychologist like myself. That might mean seeing a social worker, a medical social worker, a counselor, which is something that I also do as well. It could mean seeing a psychiatrist. A psychiatrist now means, okay, in addition to our talk therapy, some pharmaceutical treatment also needs to be applied to now, for example, stabilize your mood, or your serotonin levels might be too low or too high. So it's all about bringing that balance back to life, because now it becomes a disorder when it is affecting your daily ability to function, right? So when you're able to now get that direction, psychotherapy, for example, now helps you correct your dysfunctional thoughts, because that's what's going on. It's irrational thoughts. So there's antecedents. Your antecedents are your what triggers a certain behavior. And then a behavior now follows. And from that behavior, you now experience a certain consequence. So the antecedent may be, again, I'm not good enough. I'm not slim enough. Or it may be, I'm not thick enough. I'm not curvy enough. What do I need to do in order to gain that? To achieve those gains. And with eating disorders, it's not just a physical gain, it's also a mental gain, because their main goal is to feel better about themselves, when in fact they're actually self-harming. So with the right treatment, anything is possible. We can now correct those irrational thoughts and replace them with more functional, healthy thoughts. I am worthy. I deserve better. We need our main priority when it comes to treating this eating disorders to be our health and not the image of health.
Thank you so much, Ms. Keeney, for your amazing insights as always. So I'm really sure that everybody listening to the sound of my voice, they must have grabbed like quite a handful. Like I know I have. I have grabbed so much, and I'm going to apply them moving forward. So over to the next important aspect of today's episode, body positivity. Could you share with us what it means to have a positive body image, and why isn't so important?
Happy to raise your consciousness. That is what we therapists are here for. And boring me? Absolutely not. I am here to share as well as I'm here to learn as well. So I'm happy we can have this exchange. In terms of body positivity, you know, when I think of it, it really reminds me of self-actualizing tendency. That's a term in therapy where someone reaches the ability to understand that everyone's potential is different. And as unconventional as that may sound, it applies to even the physical aspect of who we think we are, who we think we should be, and what we're trying to achieve. So it goes back to the question that you asked earlier, when I then said it's very unrealistic goals that we're trying to achieve when we think of this is who I am supposed to be. So we need to normalize being more realistic with our expectations. So for instance, it's like someone who is 5 feet five or 5 feet four, like myself, who is trying to become 5 feet nine. It's unrealistic. So once you have unrealistic expectations, you are now thriving for something that is unattainable, which now then impacts your quality of life. Because for as long as I want to be 5 foot nine and I'm 5 foot five, I'm never going to be happy. And this is it's the exact same with body positivity. The first thing we need to do is recognize that health is supposed to be the priority. Health. Are we healthy? Because you can gain weight, you can lose weight, you can exercise, you can restrict your diet, you can do all of the above, but you may not necessarily be happy. So that's one of the first things we need to go ahead and recognize.
This is really beautiful. I was about asking you, how social media can affect body image and what people can do to actually protect themselves from its negative effects. And you've answered, partly part of the question. So, let's talk about techniques, strategies. What can people use to cultivate a positive body image?
I would recommend that people prioritize their health over body image first and foremost. Acceptance is also key. Being able to realize that once you set realistic goals, then it now becomes achievable in terms of, am I prioritizing my health, or am I prioritizing what society says I should in fact look like? I would also recommend therapy, because in fact what it does, it helps to now correct some of those dysfunctional or some of those irrational thoughts that tell you that you're not good enough. Because really, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. Whether it be past trauma, past abuse, you are now self-harming, which is a form of abuse to yourself. So to cultivate that type of positive body image is all about being able to have self-acceptance and recognize the difference between what is and what isn't your choice at the end of the day. And your health should be your number one choice.
Therapeutically speaking, I would also say we need to stop comparing ourselves to each other, to our peers, our friends, and this is where social media plays a huge role as well. So my third recommendation would be to decrease and limit, instead of limiting our diet, we need to limit our screen time. We tell kids that all the time. You have an exam, you're about to study, decrease your screen time. But for adults, for some reason, we tend to overlook that. Sometimes we may need to step away from our phones, our devices, our tablets, our laptops, and we actually need to unplug, because it's an overstimulation of this is what I should look like. And it's sad. It really is a tragedy. When I spoke to Nazif the other day, I asked him that. I said, tell me more, because I am not based in Nigeria. And when I think of the Nigerian culture, I tend to think of a different type of beauty standards. So what is cliche in the States or the Caribbean or, South America might be different from what is attractive or what is appealing in Nigeria. And when I think of that culture specifically, I think of curves when it comes to women and embracing that and accepting that. And there was a point in time where it was the complete opposite. In the States, for example, the more curves you had, the less appealing you were. And here we are in 2023, and it's quite the opposite. So now we have people who are trying to go from one extreme to the next to stay current. And that is very dysfunctional. That is very unhealthy. So those are some things that we also need to be mindful of when we talk about mental health and eating disorders.
So our final question before, I get down to the questions asked on our mental health community. I'm sure it would be really wonderful to get those questions answered by you, since you are the professional and you'll be more equipped to answer those pending questions people had. We had a Let's Talk initiative on our NIMSA. NIMSA means the Nigerian Medical Students Association
on mental health advocacy, our mental health community, we had an anonymous Let's Talk, where people got the opportunity to, you know, ask questions concerning this body positivity and eating disorders. So I'd like to, you know, drop a few so you could answer a few of them and just share your thoughts or words of compassion to, you know, make them feel more better. I mean, how can family members and friends support someone who is struggling with an eating disorder or a negative body image?
To NIMSA, the Medical Students National Association Board, again, it's a pleasure to be here, and I'm inspired to answer these questions and have this thought-provoking discussion. Now, in terms of being able to support a family member or a friend who is struggling with their body image or having a negative body image or an eating disorder, it's important to know that your support can go a very long way. And that support doesn't have to mean you know exactly what to do. In fact, many people expect to know what to do in a situation where they have someone, or they notice someone, or they've observed someone who is struggling with, for instance, an eating disorder. And that's not the case. So your role in that particular situation is to now say, here is what. I am not familiar with the course of action or what steps to take, and that is okay. But what I can do is be mindful and be aware of it, and now help them to seek guidance from a professional. And that can mean taking them to different services, taking them to, for instance, we talked about those medical facilities, those clinics, because they usually don't have the capacity to do it themselves. If they did, they probably would not be in that particular situation. So sometimes making the calls, assisting them to the visits, attending the visits with them, and also asking them, how can I support you? That's a big thing in therapy. Not everyone needs to, or not everyone wants to be supported in this exact same way. So they may need you to make the phone call and then follow up every once in a while, and they're fine. They may need you to make the phone call, request the appointment, extend yourself in terms of showing up to those appointments with them. So it's really important to reach out to them, as awkward as that conversation might be, and say, how can I help you in this moment? Now, as medical students, you would know it's important to do a fully comprehensive assessment of your situation and the case that you're dealing with. And with that comes your pharmaceutical recommendations, as well as your therapeutic recommendations. So where can I now send this client or this patient to receive the treatment that they require? Is it to a psychologist? Do they need psychotherapy because it's severe in nature? Is it more mild and they can go ahead and be referred to a counselor? Do they need medication and now seeking a psychiatrist is imperative? So being able to have that mindfulness and the resources to be able to say, this is not something that I can treat with, but I know the professionals that can. Now, fast forward many years later, we have access to resources that we would not have had access to years before. So if, let's say, in a particular country, let's say in Nigeria, some of your resources may be limited, and hopefully there's room for improvement if that's the case, we can now outsource help externally. So that means you never have to leave your hometown, and you can research and Google free counseling services, and it can now be done virtually. And that's what I do. I do virtual therapy as of right now. And it's quite convenient, not just for the clinician, but for the client and for the patient. And practitioners are understanding and motivated to assist where they can, even if that might be outside of the country. So in addition to the physical support that you can offer them, you can also be a part of their therapeutic journey. And that can mean receiving feedback from them in terms of their treatment plan. What are some of the recommendations that they were offered? Now again, it's all based on their comfort level, but there's nothing wrong with you being able to check in. Remember, we already set up the scenario. How best can I support you? So if that means, hey, after every one or two appointments or sessions, would you like me to, or I'd like you to check in with me. I'd like you to help keep me accountable. Now it's important that you're not developing that codependency. So you're using guidance from the therapist to now be able to check in and now be able to help hold this person accountable. What are some of the warning signs I should be looking out for? Continued. What are some of the signs of recovery? Now, you're not their therapist and you're not there to monitor them. But again, we're talking about being able to give them that support that feels safe and it feels non-judgment free. Also, sometimes they may want you to know what are their food triggers. So if you're now mindful of their food triggers, you can also be able to assist. If you're now mindful of some of their maladaptive eating habits or disruptive behaviors, you are now able to assist in that moment of weakness. As they begin to recover, you can now provide positive reinforcement. You can now be able to help them in rewarding themselves, reminding them how important self-care is. Being able to say, hey, I noticed some positive changes. I just wanted to bring that to your attention. I appreciate you being able to appreciate yourself more. I see that you're taking more value in not just the overall appearance, which is the body image, but with your health in general. So quite often we're prone to point out someone's weaknesses, or what we like to call in therapy, your areas of further development. So it's important and it's crucial to also be able to highlight their improvements as well.
So I'm going to read some of the questions out. So you just, have words of compassion for them or words of advice to make them feel even more better. But the first one I have here is, I had a fatal road accident, which almost took my life, but instead destroyed my face and made me lose 5 of my teeth right now from the root. Before the accident, I hated snapping with filters because I was very beautiful without it. I was named Chinese woman in my street because of my beauty. But after the accident, whenever I snap pictures, I don't feel happy about it. So instead, I delete pictures of myself and I hated snapping pictures except I'm forced to. What words of compassion or advice would you have for this young lady?
So what I would say to that is, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that to even begin with. It must have been horrible going through that. And what's even more horrid is having to deal with the aftermath of the accident. You're happy you're alive, but you have to deal with this. As much as people like to encourage you and say you look beautiful regardless, you do know that I looked away before, and my looks, as much as people like to deny it, affects your self-esteem, But what I do want to say
is, I empathize with you, but I want you to look at people like Winnie Harlow. I want you to, and I literally send me a DM and I will send you at least 20 minimum supermodels who have come out, like they're either disabled, have had really horrible accidents. I'm trying to remember this particular lady that she's really popular, she does makeup. I think her name is Sharon, that had went through a fire, and so she literally had crazy burns and still has the burn scars till today, even with tattoos, makeup, tons of surgery, she still has those scars. But we're still able to find the beauty in her, because after a while you come to realize that, again, beauty is so fleeting, and a lot of people, and another thing is the type of people that surround you are more genuine people. People that will love you for what is in you and not the fleeting things, which is your appearance. Do you understand? And even with that appearance, I promise you that you are still beautiful. Not because you fit into a societal standard of what beauty is and how you may have looked before, but because you wake up every day, you face the world knowing that, okay, this is the standard, and I may not match that standard at this point, but you keep going, you keep living your life, you keep doing it. Do you understand? And that in itself is beautiful. I think you need to give yourself a break and embrace how you look more, because look, your skin is your skin. How you look is how you look. If we could change how we looked, a lot of people would change how they looked, but then we can't. And so embrace it, because nobody else is going to embrace it for you. No one else will embrace it for you. So you have to embrace it, love yourself. And the thing about self-love is so powerful, because when you love yourself, people see that, it radiates out of you, and people in turn love you for that. So you need to love yourself, give yourself that energy, start looking at yourself every day, affirm yourself, look yourself in the mirror and affirm yourself, speak it, even if you don't believe it, speak it. Take those pictures with or without the filter, take them, embrace yourself, and I promise you, over time you will love yourself more, and even the people around you will love you and find that beauty in you, whether you see it now or not.
So, Mr. Michael, we had a question on our Let's Talk initiative at our mental health community. And well, somebody asked, as a chubby guy, do we have chance of finding love? Could you please respond to that question?
Okay, yeah. So, short answer, yes. I am a very firm believer of the fact that there's somebody out there for everybody. And I mean, being a guy, it makes your work a lot easier. All you need to do is have money. that's on a lighter note though. But for real though, I believe that there are people who like their man being chubby. I believe very firmly in the fact that you should only change your look, because you should only change your look for your own self. Like, you shouldn't change because of any other thing. Unless it be health reasons. But besides health reasons, I mean, like, you're the one who gets to look like that. You're the one who looks in the mirror and looks like that. If you don't like being chubby, then you can work on it. There are things you can do. There are dietary plans, there's intermittent fasting, there are exercises, and all of these things you can do to reduce your weight. That's if you want to. Not because of anybody out there. I hope you understand that, not because of anybody out there, but if you're totally comfortable in your skin, as I think you should be. I think at the end of the day, it's all about confidence, really. It really is all about confidence. So if you're really comfortable in your skin and you're confident, I'm sure you can attract the hottest lady out there. Yes. So, yes, there's a very high chance of you finding love. I mean,
Ms. Kini, for your wonderful insights, as always. So I'm going to ask, drop the questions now, or the stories people shared on the Let's Talk initiative. Well, the first one I have here is, somebody said, I got PCOS in 2020. I was a size 6, heck, size 8, heck, size 6 even. Then I doubled to a size 16 overnight. It's like the more I tried harder, the more I try harder to lose weight, then I became hypertensive and everything was haywire. I started suffering from clinical depression. I would always fall sick.
outwards, I have a big bum and people would always compliment me, but inward, I felt like my body failed me, and I even stopped looking at the mirror, taking pictures. The last time I took a picture of my body and posted was in 2021. I haven't had the guts to post another one. Now I work out sometimes, I skip, but I'm gaining my confidence back too. Sometimes I feel like my body is useless and shapeless, but I'm working on it. Ms. Kinney, please, what words of advice or compassion do you have for this young lady?
The person struggling with the PCOS and some of the clinical depression that may have come with it, words of advice and my words of compassion would be to prioritize your health and your happiness overall. I mentioned it earlier in our discussion with you, Favor, and there's a reason for that. Most times when we talk about body positivity and body image issues, health is a last resort. We're not asking ourselves, how healthy is my diet? How healthy is my workout or exercise regime? What we're asking ourselves is, how good do I look in the eyes of others? So we have to look inwardly. I made reference to it earlier in our discussion as well, in terms of having realistic expectations for yourself and being one with yourself and recognizing that we are not here to compare ourselves to others. We are not here to live up to the expectations of others, as well as your own expectations. Your own expectations also have to be now realistic. PCOS, for example, now we're talking about a medical disease, a medical illness, right? Which can lead into a mental health disorder, which is what you also would have touched on. Now, this is a hormonal imbalance. First and foremost, I would say to you, remember that that's something that you have no control over. What you can do, however, is ensure that you are following up with your physician. You are giving them accurate feedback in terms of your treatment, or what they see best for you, what you see best for yourself, how the medication is working for you or against you, because this gives them the understanding of, okay, something may need to be changed, something may need to be altered, whether it's a dosage, whether it's a type of medication. And as far as the psychological warfare that comes with, let's say the excessive weight gain, where you don't feel confident about yourself, again, this is where the therapeutic intervention will now take place. Where that understanding of self-actualizing, reaching your best potential, and your best potential is to strive for your mental health and your physical health. There's no therapist that would say, or no physician, or no medical student, or no doctor that says, yeah, forget about your health, let's prioritize how you just look on the outside. Absolutely not. So I would say to you, you are beautiful and you deserve more. Regardless of someone's weight, height, gender, our skin color is beautiful. Regardless of how pale or how dark it may be, our hair is beautiful, no matter how stringy, frizzy, curly, or kinky it may be. So that's most important in terms of being able to heal yourself from within. Once you begin that healing process, everything around you is now enhanced. You tend to see the world differently. Because with a medical disorder like PCOS, and then the clinical depression or the comorbid disease that can now come with it, affects your judgment. So you're not going to want to look in the mirror because you're not pleased with what you see. So we have to correct those dysfunctional thoughts that tell us, I am not good enough. I am too overweight, or I am underweight. We have to replace it with positive thoughts. And that's why it's called body positivity. Not so? So for instance, if you're raising a child, what do you tell that child? So be your own best friend. Be your best friend. What words of advice would you give a friend who's struggling with PCOS and clinical depression and anxiety and whatever might come with that? What type of healthy advice would you give them? And that's the advice that you also want to give yourself.
Thank you very much, Ms. Keeney. I mean, that was really, really, really beautiful. And I'm really sure you have, you know, made a positive mark on the girl suffering from PCOS. So the very last question as we wrap up today's episode, somebody said, I am very conscious about my body, my bust specifically. There are days where I know I look good, or I can't help but feel shattered because I feel it's too much and it doesn't fit into beauty standard.
So for the person who may not be satisfied with their bust area, or their chest size, for instance, one of the first things I would ask you is to ask yourself, is it having an impact on my health once again? Am I healthy? What's the discomfort? And if it's the beauty standards, once again, then that's where we have to take it from a now therapeutic approach and psychologically discover what are some of those latent, dysfunctional, irrational cognitions that are coming into play, that's telling you that this doesn't live up to the beauty standards that now exists. Now, when we talk about beauty standards, there's lots of myths that need to be dispelled. There's lots of misconceptions that need to be dispelled. And I honestly, as a clinician, as a therapist, as a psychologist, as a social worker, and as a person, I think we really need to hurry up and get away from this idea of what is universal in terms of beauty. For instance, when we think about, historically speaking, what was considered beautiful and what is now trending seems to be completely different. You watch TV, you look at movies, commercials, advertisements, magazines. The standards of beauty has changed. So can you imagine how unfair that is to yourself or a human who is now trying to adjust to these ever-changing trends? Absolutely not. So again, you're asking yourself, yes, I may not be satisfied with my bust area for a number of reasons, but is it impacting my health? And be able to look into the mirror and tell yourself that you are still beautiful. And if there's things that you can do to reduce, let's say, the tension that might come with it, because, you know, as females, you know, the size of your bust can have an impact on your neck and your shoulders, and then that's fine, because now you're taking it from it's carrying some type of medical weight in terms of being able to function, get up and function on a daily basis, you know, go to work, get the job done. But if you're approaching it purely from a beauty standard perspective, then that's where psychologically we need to go ahead and change what we are telling ourselves about what is beautiful. Now everyone wants to look like a Nigerian. Imagine that. And I'm telling you, this is someone who is from the States originally, lived there for many years, has also lived in the Caribbean for many years. And I'm telling you, now people have a desire to have the reverse of what was once despised or what was frowned upon. And we talked about that earlier. At one point, I mentioned it in terms of culturally what's appealing. Someone who, a woman who is shapely and voluptuous, is now the new beauty standards. So bear that in mind when you're trying to keep up with the trends. Physically, how do we go about doing that? Of course, there would be exercise, there would be change in diet, and the overarching theme is ensuring that you're taking it from a holistic standpoint and from a healthy one. So again, if you're restricting your diet and it's intense, or you're overindulging, which is binging, for example, so restricting your diet would be anorexia, then that's where it's a mental illness, right? Because it's a dysfunctional behavior. So you want to make sure that the behaviors that you are utilizing are healthy coping mechanisms. So to guide you to a place where you're now more physically and more mentally capable of being happier with yourself. So there are things that can be done. You know, there are things that can be done to change, transform yourself from a physical standpoint as well as from a mental standpoint. And no one's saying, no, that can't happen. But if it becomes obsessive, that's where it becomes an issue. The obsessive thoughts, the compulsions that come with it. So from a therapeutic standpoint, how do we go about doing that? Is the question that someone may ask. And I like to guide my clients towards their own discovery. And we call that self-discovery or guided self-discovery, where they then realize, you know, she's right. I am worthy of love. I need to accept myself more. What are the changes that I need to make? Are they healthy ones? Am I making well-adjusted decisions? And then you can now move accordingly to suit. So, for instance, with let's use Maslow's hierarchy of needs. This is all the steps it requires for someone to be satisfied holistically with themselves and who they are. And when one of those steps are missing, we tend to see neurosis. We tend to see the dysfunction that we're referring to. We tend to see the dissatisfaction and the unhappiness that we sit with. But it can be changed, it can be altered with work. Now, in adolescence, in childhood, working your way up to adulthood, these mechanisms should have been placed there for us. But guess what? That doesn't always take place. In the realistic world, that doesn't always happen. So we can recover once we give ourselves those mechanisms. So for instance, your basic needs need to be met. So those basic or those physiological needs would be water, food, and shelter. Water, food, and shelter. That's basic need when you talk about your hierarchy of needs. It starts off at the very beginning. Because if you don't have water, food, and shelter, then anything else after that really doesn't matter because you need those to survive. So if you're doing an assessment with a child, you determine, are you being fed? Do you have a home? And do you have clothes? And once those things, those basic needs are being met, then we can move on to the next, right? The other need is your safety needs. And this is quite obvious what that would mean. Security, a sense of security. employment, being able to have certain resources available. So how safe do I feel walking around in my community, in my neighborhood? How safe do I feel when I come home from school as a child? How safe do I feel as an adult when I've had a long day from work and I now have to return home? How safe do I feel? How secure do I feel within my job? How secure do I feel with my education? How secure do I feel? Because that security then brings some level of comfort. It brings a level of stability. So that's your second need after that, those physiological needs. Now remember, we're working our way up the steps. We're working our way, we're walking up a ladder here. So we've passed the first step and those needs are met. We've passed the second step, which is your security or your safety needs. And then we have your self-esteem needs or your need of belonging. A lot of people tend to know this, but we still overlook it. What does it mean to want to belong? That's a huge and that's a massive need that has to be established, it has to be developed, and if it isn't, we can run into problems, psychologically speaking. Because imagine you're living in a world or a community or a country where you don't feel as though you belong. You're living in a home where you don't feel as though you belong. Can you imagine what that does to someone's self-esteem? So people join teams and sporting groups and churches, and even in schools, certain, for example, this association, to feel a sense of belonging. And if you feel rejected, then what does that do to the mind? It sends your brain certain messages that you're not worthy of belonging here. So it's important and it's imperative that we find places where we genuinely and authentically belong. So now that we have those basic needs met, those needs of love and belonging, the needs of safety and security, and your esteem needs are all met, you can now reach the pinnacle of that pyramid, or the peak of that triangle, because in a triangle, that's where everybody wants to be, at the peak, not at the base. But you can't skip one step and expect to feel that internal happiness that comes with all of those needs being met. And if you, for let's say some reason, you're not able to receive some of those needs as you develop throughout the course of your life, but with therapy, you can give yourself those. You can now afford yourself the opportunity as best as you can to reach those needs and have your now own personal goals met.
Wow, this has been amazing. This has been beautiful. Amazing response, amazing answers. Thank you so much, Ms. Kinney, for taking our time to, you know, have this conversation with everybody here. I mean, any final words as we, you know, wrap up today's episode?
Again, it was my absolute pleasure. I can't thank you enough for having me as well. You definitely set up a welcoming environment, and I can feel it. So to the medical students, to NISMA, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, the National Association, I would say to the medical students, stay strong, stay focused. It's okay to have those moments of weakness, because what you're doing isn't easy. It's going to be a challenge, and you are challenging yourselves. And I wish you an abundance of success. And in those moments of weakness, remember they're also called areas of further development. So they can be fixed, they can be achieved. For my listeners out there, or our listeners out there, don't be afraid to ask for help. No one is expected to have it all together. Not even a medical student, not a physician, a doctor, clinical psychologists, therapists, even helping professionals like myself need to seek help. Now, I'm not familiar with the inner workings of Nigeria, for example, but there are some places of employment that offer counseling to their staff members. I know in the States we call it the EAP program, and it's just a resource where they can fund at least 5 of those sessions. So again, we have to be resourceful in this time. And sometimes people are afraid to ask because of the judgment that comes with it and the misconceptions that surround it. So it's important to advocate and also educate ourselves, our listeners as well. Seek help where needed and where necessary. You're not alone. There are safe spaces for you to find healing. So to close, I want people to understand that there's a trans-theoretical progression to change or to transformation. And what that simply means is there's a point where someone doesn't even realize that they have a problem. They don't even realize that they have an eating disorder. They don't even realize that they are binging or they are overindulging or restricting their diet. They don't even realize it. And that's what we call the pre-contemplation stage. And then there's a stage where they begin to say, hold on, this might actually be a problem. I haven't eaten in a day, or I am obsessing over my weight and what my and what I look like and the image that I'm portraying to the world. So they start to realize, okay, something might actually be wrong. So that's where you get into contemplation. You're contemplating on, wait, this may be a presenting problem. This actually is affecting my ability to function on a day-to-day basis. Once you get to that stage, some people remain in that stage and they never move forward. But with therapy, you can begin to plan. You can begin to realize that I have this problem. What can I do to change it? And that's where planning stage comes in. What treatment plan do I need? And after you plan, then that's where we now can enter the action stage. Okay, I've noticed that is the problem. Before, I didn't even realize I had this problem. I've planned to take myself to some form of treatment. I've planned to educate myself if for some reason you can't access those resources. So you can go to Google Scholar. I mentioned Google earlier. And of course, you want to make sure that it's coming from a reputable site, because Google can have information from anyone, right? And you have now begun to design a plan with your therapist or your counselor or your social worker. And that plan has to be SMART goals, is what we like to call them. So are those goals specific? Are those goals measurable? Are those goals achievable? Are those goals realistic? And can it be achieved within a certain time frame? So for someone who is suffering with some form of eating disorder, I want to emphasize that your goals have to be extremely specific, just as specific as your obsession with the nutritional intake on the back of the food that you're about to purchase. That's how specific your goals need to be. I will require myself to eat 3 square meals, such and such and such. You don't want to have ambiguous, vague goals, because you want to be able to measure those goals. You want it to be able to say, okay, did I eat 3 square meals and were they healthy portions? Yes or no? All right, and of course they have to be realistic, just like any of our goals or any of our expectations in life. And you want to be able to give yourself deadlines. You want to be able to give yourself a target to be able to say, within this amount of time, I expect to achieve this. And then again, you want to hold yourself accountable. All right. And then one of the last stages after you have now initiated action and you're actually doing something different about it is where you now want to maintain those changes. You have to maintain it. So just like with anything in life, you have to maintain it. You have to maintain your health. You have to maintain your wealth, your weight. You have to maintain your wealth. If that's the case, you have to maintain a car. How do you maintain your skin, your hair? Because if you don't, then again, we have presenting problems. And then some clinicians recognize a last stage and some don't, which is our relapse, you know, because it can happen all over again. And you can start over from the beginning where you even forgot you had a problem to begin with. So that's why maintaining those goals is important to counteract or mitigate the chances of relapse.
Thank you so much, Ms. Kinney, for, you know, creating time to have this conversation with us. Even with your busy schedule, you still made it a priority. So any last words from Naya and Mr. Michael as we wrap up today's episode?
Thank you so much, Favor, for having me on. This is not a small honor. I really do appreciate it. The opportunity to be here and speak on such a sensitive topic. What I would want to say in conclusion is your body is yours. No one can never love your body the way you love your body. You set the standard of what love for your body is. So if you don't raise that standard sky high, no one is ever going to meet that standard. Don't hold your body to the standards of society. Society standards changes. It's so flippant and you can't put yourself to that standard. It's not realistic. Half of the things you see that you think that, okay, this is the standard, lots of people are faking it. So imagine you holding yourself to a standard that's not even real, that the people that create it and fuel it can't even live up to. It doesn't make any sense. Of all things, prioritize yourself and your mental health. If leaving social media, going off is what you have to do so you don't get like feel a certain way, if cutting some people off is what you have to do because they don't serve you and like your mental health, they're always bullying you, taunting you, talking about your size, you need to cut them off. You prioritize your mental health. It's just as important as your physical health. Yeah, outline your triggers and work on them. So I have to say, so yeah, that's it. I love you guys loads, and yeah, thank you for having me, Favor. I really appreciate it. Bye.
Thank you so much, Favor, for having me. It was really a wonderful time. It was really nice conversing with each and every one of you. Nice to meet each and every one of you too. So yeah.
Yeah, so thank you everyone for having me. It was a delight. I had such a great time. I want to wish everyone continued an abundance of success, happiness, and remember to be grateful even for small mercies. Thanks again.
And it's a wrap. Thank you everyone for, you know, for your wonderful contribution on the subject, eating disorder and body image positivity. To our amazing guests, thank you for creating time for, you know, just having the conversation. And I'm really sure everybody listening to the sound of my voice that has listened to this episode up until now, first of all, I want to say kudos for, you know, sticking to the end of today's episode. It was quite lengthy, unlike what we normally have, because, you know, the subject is really sensitive. So we need to touch all areas and all aspects so we are well-grounded, you know, to be well-equipped with the skills moving forward in our lives. Thank you so much for tuning in as always. I mean, it's a 10 over 10 from my end. Don't forget to, you know, share your thoughts on our social media platform @mentalhealth_podcast_. And if you're a Spotify user, you can, you know, leave your questions on the Q&A section. Just swipe up. And don't forget, you're listening to the Mental Health Podcast, and I am your host, Irike Tumafavor. this podcast is proudly sponsored by the Nigerian Medical Students Association on Mental Health Advocacy. Don't forget, I love you, but God loves you more.